Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on Channel Q. We've got a great show. I feel like I say that every day. But, you know, we put in a lot of work.
We do.
That's all I can say.
Ratings matter, people. Ratings matter. So keep listening.
And you know what also matters? Being informed.
Okay, this is good. Where are you going, Shira? Here we go. I'm sitting down.
I'm just saying, it's true. It's practical. Being informed is really important these days.
Oh, I thought you were going to go somewhere with that.
No, I'm just saying. But actually, you know, I've been reading a lot these days. Every year, I feel like I have a resolution to read more. And I feel like this has been the year that it's finally happened where
same.
I feel like I'm consistently getting through books. Really?
Yeah,
what
actually,
books have you been reading?
I've been saying that I want to read, but I didn't say I was reading books. But I want to actually read more books because a lot of my friends are these amazing authors. And I really want to kind of start diving into that. And I feel like that's just a whole other world. Being a book nerd is like interesting.
I love it. I really do. Well, I might have to put down my spirituality books. You know, I'm all into those books, getting deep, because Mariah Carey has a memoir coming out. It's called The Meaning of Mariah Carey. We're going to be going deep with Mariah and into her world. It's available for pre-order now through her personal website. But if you're a mega fan, you can line up with safety, social distancing, of course, 6 feet apart on September 29th to buy it in real life. So she's letting you buy it for real.
Did you get paid for this announcement?
No, I'm just saying.
This is very sponsored.
Well, this is the announcement. This is not sponsored.
This feels very sponsored. I feel like you have gotten some secret money from Mariah Carey for this announcement. And I don't know why I didn't get the cut.
I must say, people thought I always looked like a younger Mariah Carey with my curly hair.
No
people
one
swear. No.
No one thought
no, I swear.
No one
I swear
that.
I've been told that. I'm
no right. One thought you were Mariah Carey.
No, not that I was. They thought I looked like a younger
No one thought you looked like a I'm sorry, you are a white woman. No one thought you looked like Mariah Carey. You can do Lady Gaga. I will let you have Miss Stephanie.
I'm not.
I will not let you sit here on this good internet in time and tell me that somebody thought you looked like Mariah Carey. I know you lied. We're gonna have to get on to the show. What's coming up next? Because that's...
Well, check out Mariah Carey's book on
filter. With your curly
coming
hair?
Up. Yeah, people have said... All right. I'm not lying here.
I don't
but I'm happy
it.
We have some
was
trust.
Was it some other white person that said it?
I don't remember.
It was
many people over time.
No, it wasn't. You can't... It was white people that said it.
Let's get into what's trending this hour. All right. So why are hospitalizations up 50% since mid-June across the U.S.? Well, Kayleigh McEnany, you know, the press secretary, gave her take on this whole thing.
Just my follow-up, if I may, on coronavirus quickly, Kayleigh. Hospitalizations in the country are up 50% since mid-June. How can the president say that the country is in good shape right now?
So I would note with hospitalizations in a lot of these hospitals, I spoke with Dr. Birx this morning, about 10 to 40% in the hospitals reaching high capacity are COVID. So a lot of hospitalizations aren't pertaining to COVID. What I would also note,
well,
and I'm glad-
Hospitalizations is not because of COVID?
Well, a lot of it is elective surgeries and other surgeries that have opened up. About 10 to 40% in the hospitals reaching capacity are COVID related. But I'm glad that you...
I love her trying to wiggle her way through this. It's really fascinating to watch.
Oh my God, I thought you said I love her. I literally heard.
No, watching her wiggle her way through these questions.
Oh.
Somehow, but she, I'm telling you, in her messed up way, she's a genius at getting away with it because she never says any ums. She never says like, she's just
good
so
at
clear.
Her job.
But she looks you straight in the eye into the camera and does not even take a beat, like mess up at all.
Sure, that's her job. She's supposed to. I know we haven't had really good examples of people in that position from this administration, but this is her job and she's supposed to be lying to the American people.
She's really great at it.
She's really good at lying. She is.
The Texas Republican Party has filed a lawsuit to try to force Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner to let them hold a massive indoor convention next week. The Texas GOP has been planning this gathering of 5,000 to 6,000 delegates and activists in the convention center in Houston next week for a multi-day party convention. After rejecting pleas from Turner, the mayor, to move the convention online. We shouldn't have to beg. It's not smart to hold these events inside. It's not even smart to go to a restaurant inside. Why would a mayor let his own citizens do this and put them at risk?
Because Turner doesn't care.
Well, no, Turner, the mayor actually cares, but he's citing it as a public health risk. So he moved to cancel the convention, and that's why they're trying to sue him right now.
Oh, so they want the convention, but he's trying to actually save their lives.
He's actually trying to do his job.
Wow.
We're in the, what do Stranger Things call it? The Upside Down? Yeah. Is that what it's called?
Yes, that is what it's called.
Los Angeles City Mayor Eric Garcetti began his coronavirus press conference yesterday with some good news and then a warning. He said, we're making progress. And while it is fragile, it is progress. He said, though, that these next 2 weeks are absolutely critical, critical to whether our schools open, whether our country thrives. All options remain on the table. We'll do whatever we need to. If things get worse, though, he said, we'll likely return to a mandated stay-at-home order in 1 or 2 weeks.
I'm not thinking we're going to leave this house anytime soon anyway, even if things are safe out there. I don't know. I don't know when I'll ever feel safe to go back home or go back out, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that is true. We're going to just looking at each other through Zoom for the rest of our lives until we... Until we get old.
I'm literally still stuck that you said people think you look like Mariah Carey. I just can't get off of that. I'm sorry. I'm completely just thrown off of my game.
Well, that was some What's Trending this hour. Now, coming up, the Supreme Court has ruled that Trump can't hold back his tax records any longer. But will it even make a difference? What loopholes are out here again? That's next in 10 minutes. It is happening. The Supreme Court has finally approved a subpoena to get President Donald Trump's financial records and tax returns held by Trump's accounting firm. Wow. Is this the moment we've been waiting for? Is it actually going to happen? Well, back with us, the senior editor from The Washington Post, Mark Fisher. Thanks for being back.
Good to be with you.
All right. Before we get into all of this and if we're actually going to get any information, I just want to play this clip of Nancy Pelosi's reaction to this decision.
The Supreme Court, including the president's appointees, have declared that he is not above the law. The path that the Supreme Court has laid out is one that is clearly achievable by us in the lower court, and we will continue to go down that path.
So does this all mean that the records will be seized? Is there still a catch, Mark?
There is something of a catch. I mean, this is a huge, bold victory for the rule of law, for American norms and legal traditions. This is the Supreme Court saying that no person is above the law. This is the Supreme Court saying that presidents must be held accountable. But courts tend to move slowly and in a cumbersome way. And what they've decided here is that this issue has to go back to the original court where it all started to be reconsidered, but with the Supreme Court's holding that the president can indeed be subpoenaed, that the state criminal prosecution can have access to the president's tax records, just as a federal grand jury might want to have. So the law is very much on the side of those who are prosecuting this case. It's a New York case involving potential charges of money laundering by the president of the United States. And the New York prosecutor, Cyrus Vance, now has pretty much a green light, but he's got to go through all the steps of getting the documents from the president. And the good part for Trump here is that he can run out the clock. There's no way that you're going to go through a court ruling and all of the appeals that the president would then have at his available to him. All of that is going to take way more time than between now and Election Day. So assuming that this was going to be a campaign issue, we're not going to see those tax returns.
Oh,
interesting. Well, here's the thing, because they're also saying that the Supreme Court is giving Trump an opening to raise further arguments as appropriate in lower courts against the document's release, which obviously means that this is going to continue. So is that what you're talking about here? Or is this something different where he can just argue and say, I don't want to give my tax returns to you all?
No, he'll have to come up with new reasons. And the Supreme Court was extremely strong in saying that the reasons he gave this time, namely that you can't hold a president to account and that presidents have executive privilege and are not subject to the usual criminal proceedings that any American would be subject to, the Supreme Court said that was absolute nonsense. That was totally bogus and used very strong language. And this is coming from both the conservatives and the liberals on the court. It was a 7-2 ruling, but even those who dissented, even the two conservatives who dissented, agreed that the president's reasoning on this was absolute nonsense and that presidents can and must be held accountable. So the question now is, will he raise different objections, and will the lower court figure out a way to get those tax returns released to the New York prosecutors with using both the getting past the old objections and the new ones? And that will take some months to play out. And of course, the president's term only has a few months left.
Of course. We're talking to senior editor Mark Fisher from the Washington Post about President Trump's tax returns and if we're finally going to be able to see them. And now, I guess, how is this going to impact his election moving forward, or it won't? And it just, does it just continue his narrative of the witch hunt? And it seems like that's going to be his excuse.
We're going to see way more of the president calling this a hoax and a witch hunt and all of the slogans that he used against the Mueller investigation and against the congressional impeachment that he faced. So he'll attack this ruling from now till the end of his term. But he's deeply humiliated by this. This is the Supreme Court, including his own appointees, the ones Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, who were supposedly going to protect him, now turning against him and saying this president, like all presidents, is not above the law.
I was going to ask, what has been going on over there at the Supreme Court? Because it seems like the past 2 weeks, there's been a lot of surprises. What are you hearing behind the scenes in terms of like some of these people voting against him?
Yeah, are Republicans over Donald Trump is what we're asking.
No, this is a case, this is something that I think a lot of people don't really understand about the Supreme Court. It is not a political body. And although the president tried to politicize it, the fact is, as Chief Justice John Roberts repeatedly says, there are no Obama justices, there are no Trump justices. There are just justices who have different interpretations of law. And in most cases, they have the same interpretation of the law. More than three quarters of cases that come before the Supreme Court end up with a unanimous or near unanimous ruling. These 5-4 decisions that get all the excitement and the drama, really, those are extremely rare. And so what you're seeing here is that the court is saying what it has always said, which is that all Americans are subject to the same law and that must be treated the same way. And the president is a little bit different. In the other case they decided today about congressional subpoenas of the president, they decided that there are some privileges that the executive has, and Congress needs to be a little bit more specific when it wants to subpoena documents from him.
Okay, well, that was Mark Fisher, senior editor from the Washington Post, and he's going to stick with us right here on Let's Go There, because after this, we're going to be getting into the second round of stimulus checks, and are they coming? But there might be a catch. That's next in 10 minutes. Guess what? The Senate may pass another coronavirus relief bill, but how will it be different than the first? Back with us is senior editor from the Washington Post, Mark Fisher. So, Mark, what are you hearing around this right now?
Well, this is a case of partisan politics meeting a crisis, and it's not exactly clear how it's going to play out. Right now, what we have is an obvious need. This is a lot of the aid that helped Americans through the first stage of the coronavirus epidemic. Unemployment help with getting food and all kinds of other aid to different industries. A lot of that is expiring. In addition, some of the state bans on evictions are expiring at the end of this month. And so there's kind of a cliff coming up where people are going to be in a very desperate situation, and people in Congress are hearing their constituents from both parties, but they have very different concepts of how to handle it. The Democrats want to do another huge relief package the way the first one was done, if not more so. The Republicans want to see a much smaller kind of operation, one that stimulates people to get back to work. They're very afraid that if we give more money to people, that those unemployment checks, those stimulus checks, can actually be more money than some people were earning on the job. And they're worried that that will be a disincentive for people to go out and work, get the economy moving again.
So, I hate that excuse, by the way. They should just tell companies to increase their wages. This whole thing is
weird. Well, it's not that. It's just the idea of, like, obviously this is going to run out at some point. You know, they're not going to be able to continue this. So this narrative saying, like, oh, poor people are going to get too comfortable feels awful. It really feels like, you know, everything they say about the Republican Party in some sense is being proven by the way they're navigating and, like, not even really caring about even thinking $1,200 was enough for people to survive. Like, that's just wild to me.
Well, certainly there are some people for whom it was a real stretch to get by on the stimulus money. There are other people who are getting more from the stimulus money than they've been earning in jobs that have now either vanished or aren't coming back anytime soon. So for those people, I've talked to some of those people, and they say they would love to be back at their job. That's more stable, obviously, than a handout.
Right.
But at the moment, they desperately need the handout. So It's a tough situation, and given the politics and the timing of the calendar, it's hard to see how they'll come to a really good consensus in the remaining weeks of this month, which is when this deal needs to get done. So the clock is ticking. This feels a little bit like all those government shutdowns of recent years, where we'll probably have a last-minute desperation move where there'll be some attempt to either get a deal, or we'll go into an even deeper crisis where people will not be able to have access to food, where evictions will spike. I mean, there are many states where landlords are not willing to make any more concessions, and state governors don't any longer have the money to help people out and prevent evictions. States have to balance their budgets, unlike the federal government, and states have gone deep into the hole to get people through this first bit of the virus epidemic. They are not equipped to handle the next phase. That's up to the federal government, and we have a president who doesn't want to do that.
Yeah, this seems like a mess. Again, senior editor from The Washington Post, Mark Fisher, joins us as we talk about this new coronavirus relief bill that it seems like might happen, but it will happen very last minute. I mean, how will this one be different, do you think, if it does happen?
Well, it's going to carve out some industries. Some industries will probably get more because they're close to the president and the president supports them. Other industries will be cut off. And it may play out according to regions of the country as well, as the president is going to want to show favoritism to those areas where he either has a strong base or thinks he's going to be competing for votes in November. Other parts of the country that he sees as solidly blue may not be quite as generous, but it's not entirely up to him. Mitch McConnell is going to play a very crucial role in this because the Senate is really where the rubber meets the road on this kind of bailout operation. The House is obviously there's a big Democratic package with lots of aid to lots of industries that has no chance of getting through the Senate. Initially, McConnell said he didn't want to take up another relief bill. Now he's changed his mind and he does want to. He sees the need, especially given this new surge in virus cases. There's going to be definitely more support for first responders, more support for the hospital industry, which is suffering terribly because they've been unable to do all the services other than take care of coronavirus cases. And so some of those industries, tourism, hospitality, that got big help in the first round, not likely they'll get terribly much this time around. It really will vary industry by industry.
So do you think at this point, because obviously it's being reported that millions of Americans could face eviction this month, do you think that's also going to be included in if like Senate Republicans refuse to pass the HEROES Act? And could that really leave a lot of Americans hanging at this point?
Yeah, it's hard to see the Republicans jumping on board a care package for renters across the country, certainly not in the way of direct aid to them. You might see more aid to people who have been furloughed from low-income jobs, and that may indirectly help a lot of renters. But there'd be a lot of middle-class renters who would not be helped by that and who have no way to pay their rent because their jobs have vanished or have been temporarily furloughed. So we're going to see whether indeed the evictions spike at the end of the month. You know, that's likely to happen. If the aid package includes a lot of help for renters, we'll see that low-income people will perhaps be able to pay some or all of their rent. Middle-class people who've lost their jobs probably are facing a much more difficult situation because they're unlikely to get aid from this relief package and yet are unable to pay their rent.
Very scary stuff. Well, thank you so much again for your time today. We appreciate it. That was Mark Fisher, senior editor from the Washington Post. Now coming up, watch out, Karens. This new proposed law aims to punish racially biased police calls. We discuss that next in 10 minutes. We are back and we've got an update on the Central Park Karen. Remember Amy Cooper, who tried to call the cops on Christian Cooper, who was just out bird watching? Well, Christian, who was the guy at the center of this whole thing, says he's now not going to cooperate with the Manhattan District Attorney's investigation. And I guess that's surprising. He actually says that she's already paid a steep price, he told the New York Times, referring to the criminal charge. That's not enough of a deterrent to others. So if the DA feels the need to pursue charges, he should pursue charges. But he can do that without me.
Adding that
greater principles are at stake. What do you mean? Why is that embarrassing?
It's embarrassing to the fact that this black man, unfortunately, and it goes into a new, more of a nuanced conversation, but unfortunately, this woman weaponized her whiteness and literally could have cost this black man his life. If a police came on the scene and they would have automatically probably drew their guns out and saw that he was the attacker and just took her word for it regardless of evidence. This is embarrassing to the fact that it shows. I'm happy that he's in a place where he feels like he can forgive her. I think that's great. But every reaction comes with a consequence. And she deserves all of everything that is happening to her, because guess what? This is serious stuff. And if this is also her committing a crime, which she did, she deserves to also handle those consequences. And the fact that he can't just also, you know, forgive her, but then also understand, like, yes, she needs to experience these consequences to not only for herself to learn something, but for everyone in this country to realize the seriousness of doing something like this. It's just another example. And it goes, like I said, into a more nuanced conversation that a lot of black women have and a lot of, like, just, you know, black people have in general when it comes to this idea of, like, just black men, unfortunately, like, even though they have all the support from the community saying, like, the rising up, I mean, Amy Cooper wouldn't have been a thing if people on the internet was not, like, making this such a big deal, right? A black woman was the initial one. His sister was the initial person to tweet this. So for him to kind of say something like this in my eyes and point of view, and I would love to, like, know more if you're listening, if you are a black woman or a trans black woman, but this is like a slap in the face, in all honesty. His statement saying that is a slap in the face, and it's embarrassing.
It's an interesting take on it. It seems like he just feels like it's already destroyed her career and reputation, and like, how much further should we all go with this? But meanwhile, you know, if this new act that this San Francisco lawmaker is proposing, the Karen Act, to stop discriminatory 911 calls, if this was in place, actually, she would be charged already. Right. So this is what's going on in San Francisco. They're trying to introduce this ordinance that would punish racially motivated 911 calls, named the Caution Against Racially Exploitative Non-Emergencies, or Karen Act with a C.
I'm sorry. I think people have to understand the consequences. If you're going to break the law, there are consequences in that. And the fact that, like I said, she weaponized her white womanness. She weaponized her whiteness to say that he was attacking her when we clearly saw that that was not the case. He could have lost his life. He could have been another name. And the fact that he is just not even understanding that, because you can have this forgiveness. You most definitely can. He can forgive her, all that stuff. But like, the idea of like just kind of erasing her of the consequences that is deserved is sad to me.
Yeah, and I do wonder behind the scenes if they've connected, if they've had a conversation, like, what's that like? Because they've now, their lives have completely changed because of one another.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know. Like I said, I feel like a lot of people feel, and the conversation I saw online is, it's a slap in the face.
All right. Well, who knows if the Karen Act will obviously happen in San Francisco or other cities and states in the future across America. Now, coming up, Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, could be heading back to jail. The crazy reason why next in What's Trending This Hour. Welcome back. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on Channel Q. Now, coming up this hour, we're going to be getting into the results of a Facebook audit that just came out, revealing how they've impacted civil rights. Now, Jessica Gonzalez, who is part of the activist group to boycott Facebook, you know, and get all those brands to pull out, is joining us for that later in the hour. And she actually just came off of a Zoom this week with Sheryl Sandberg and Mark Zuckerberg.
I mean, how huge is that? Like, one, I saw her, and I talk about this in the interview when we get to hear it. But I saw that photo of all of them just looking exhausted after that meeting, and it's absolutely hilarious. And I'm so happy that we were able to connect, because I didn't even realize that that was her until she was like, yeah, we just had a meeting with him on Tuesday.
Yeah. So definitely stick with us today because we have a great interview with her later in the show, specifically this hour. Okay, let's get into what's trending this hour, though. LA Mayor Eric Garcetti shared this powerful video of frontline workers explaining what keeps them going during the pandemic.
I don't think I can ever forget those moments when I was doing FaceTime with the families for those patients on end-of-life care.
I was trying to comfort him by holding his hand, and the thought came across my mind that my hand might be the last hand he holds.
We're seeing patients come through having a really, really hard time with this illness. Young people, old people, and some of them aren't making it.
What keeps me going through this difficult time is watching all the healthcare professionals come together and support each other.
The patients is what motivates us.
And yep, I got the feels. I mean, it is heroic to be a nurse.
Like, it is.
If you really want to give back, that is a beautiful way to.
It is, but I think, you know, obviously I'm happy because I watched a show on Netflix called Lenox Hill, and it's based off of a hospital in New York. And it is it's actually a docuseries, and they did a COVID-19 episode, and it was very emotional. I talked about it here. But, you know, I'm kind of tired of seeing these videos, and I know it's a lot, and I think these videos are trying to, especially when they're coming out of the mayor's office, I think they're trying to show people, like, it is serious and it's needed. But, you know, these doctors and these nurse practitioners and all these people that are on the front lines shouldn't have to be experiencing all of this trauma because people don't want to wear masks and people don't want to follow the rules. And that is just not, like, we shouldn't be, like, being okay with this being, like, the fuel to do right. Like, seeing someone's emotional, like, vulnerability and trauma, like, that should not be like, oh, maybe I should listen to the rules. Like, you know?
Yeah.
It's weird.
We say we respect them and thank you, but are we really helping them?
Are we really helping them?
Now let's move on to Michael Cohen, President Donald Trump's former personal attorney, who was taken back into federal custody today. You know, he was released in May, and he ended up going back to his Manhattan home on furlough. And now he actually was back in federal court to arrange the conditions of his home confinement. But the hearing ended up with him being placed in handcuffs. And it comes after pictures were taken of Cohen at a Manhattan restaurant outside of his residence this weekend. So it seems like he's not playing by the rules and he might be back in jail. Because, he left jail because of the coronavirus concerns. But who knows what's going to happen now. Now, as cafes, restaurants, and businesses navigate the pandemic, Starbucks announced that all customers will soon be required to wear masks at all of their U.S. locations.
People are still going to Starbucks?
Yeah. You've seen those videos coming out. There was a guy that actually became a hero, one of the baristas, because he told someone that he wouldn't serve them.
Yeah.
And then people raised money for him and everything. And
I have not been to Starbucks since we reported about the stuff they were putting their workers through who were trying to, you know, peacefully protest with their uniforms or their masks. You know?
Black Lives Matter.
Yeah. I don't know.
So, because of all these videos coming out where people are being told to put on their masks and them not listening, they're going to require customers to wear facial coverings while visiting all company-owned cafe locations in the U.S. And that decision was based on a growing number of government mandates, they're saying, requiring individuals to wear facial coverings while in public, as well as guidance from the CDC and other public health officials and partner feedback.
Shira, do you think we're going to be in masks for, like, basically, I don't know, the rest of our lives? Has that thought come across your mind?
This is the thing. A lot of people around the world are saying the reason why the U.S. specifically has so many issues is because just masks haven't been as normalized here, whereas in Asia, they've been wearing masks forever.
Right.
So it wasn't as big of a deal. So I do think it might become a new norm. Just about COVID. It was environment has caused other places to wear masks. So these are things, unfortunately, we have to think about unless we create some sort of human change.
I mean, it's just so interesting getting used to that. Like getting used to the idea that we will have to be shopping around for new masks.
It's part of the outfit.
Yeah, like that's the thing now. But I'm still not going to Starbucks.
All right. New York City today shut down a block of Fifth Avenue in front of Trump Tower to begin painting a Black Lives Matter mural. The mural is between 56th and 57th streets, if you want to check it out. And it was called a symbol of hate by President Donald Trump, who said it would be denigrating Fifth Avenue, which is known for expensive apartments and luxury shopping. City workers closed the street this morning, and Mayor Bill de Blasio will likely join the effort to paint the mural. All right. Now coming up, how sports teams are trying to right their wrongs with their racist names. Find out in 10 minutes. We are back, and now we're seeing a lot of brands and corporations change their names because of ties to racism. We saw that with Aunt Jemima. And now we're seeing all of that impact the world of sports as well. And this is a long time coming, let me tell you.
Well, yeah. I mean, when you have the NFL blacklisting a Colin Kaepernick, I find it to be interesting, their sudden interest in everything kind of racial that's happening and them really feeling like, oh, we need to do something instead of actually talking about the elephant in the room.
Yeah, well, so Terry Francona, who's the manager of the Cleveland Indians, told reporters on Sunday that he thinks it's time to change the team's name. And then we've got the Washington Redskins. They've been called out for so long, and yet no change has happened until now because they're finally considering a name change as well. And with us right now is Alex Reamer, deputy manager of Out Sports and also contributor to Forbes and CBS Sports Radio. Thanks again for being here.
Thanks for having me, guys. Always fun to catch up.
Yeah.
It
so
is.
Why has this taken so long? What is going on?
I mean, well, as far as the Washington football team goes, the Redskins, I mean, the easiest answer is this is finally the time where the business and financial pressure became real. I mean, that franchise dating back decades ago to previous ownership regimes was so adamant about not changing its name. And the current owner, Dan Snyder, who purchased the team in 1999, as recently as a few years ago, was saying, we are never changing the name. You can put that in capital letters. That was his quote on the topic. And they fought this in court. They had appeals over this. I mean, this has been a long fought battle. So what happened? Well, over the weekend, FedEx, which is a minority partner in the team, said, and by the way, also finances their stadium, says, we want the name changed. Pepsi, a big sponsor, says we want the name changed. Nike not only says they want a name change, they pull all Redskins merchandise from the Nike online store.
Wow.
So now we have a committee, of course, but I mean, obviously they wouldn't go this far without a name change. What happened with the Redskins? It's as simple as Dan Snyder finally was being threatened to get hit in the bank account, so he decided to change. The Indians, a little different. They had a very offensive logo, Chief Wahoo, who they discontinued a couple years ago. But the Indians' name is stuck. And, you know, I think they're an example of a team that's probably going to get a little ahead of it, because if the Redskins change, you know, you would assume that they would be next with a lot of this outcry.
Okay, so let's break this down. Like, what happens when a team actually changes a name? Like, what is that process? Is it just as simple as just a couple graphic changes?
I think probably a little more involved than that. But frankly, you know, I don't really think it's that big a deal. I mean, I've been a lifelong sports fan, a Boston sports fan. And if the Red Sox changed their name, I wouldn't give a crap. I mean, I really wouldn't. I mean, so to me, like, the name change is team colors, I think, are almost more important and symbolic with teams than a name or a nickname. I really don't think in the grand scheme of things it would affect the Redskins' business one iota. It probably would even improve things, I mean, to be honest with you.
Yeah, because they wouldn't be alienating a whole group of people. Now,
right, exactly.
Again, we are talking to Alex Reamer, who's the deputy manager of Outsports, and we're talking about all these teams changing their names finally. And now, it is sad that them being hit financially is what forced them to
change.
It's
a money game.
Yeah, I mean, it's a money game, but you guys know this, you know, with the LGBTQ movement. I mean, we would really be not as far along as we are without corporate pressure. And you even look at professional sports. I mean, there were a lot of these draconian anti-LGBT ordinances that were passed a few years ago. But the NFL, for example, says, okay, Georgia, if you sign this law, no more Super Bowls in Atlanta. What happened? Their governor vetoed the legislation. Similar situation played out in Arizona. Indiana, you remember a couple years ago with Mike Pence, signed that draconian anti-LGBT bill. What happened? A lot of organizations, corporations said, we're going to boycott business. They changed it. Same in North Carolina. So I'm as skeptical about corporate interests as I think we all are. But with this situation, and it stinks it works that way, but it really is unfortunately the only way where I think that, you know, money talks, as they say.
Well, speaking of corporate interest, I mean, we can't talk about the NFL without talking about its problematic history, right? I mean, this is something where we're seeing the NFL saying that the Black National Anthem will be sang at, like, the first whatever game or something, whatever the headline was.
Juneteenth is a holiday now.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. It's so interesting, but it still seems like they're trying to do all these changes but not talk about the elephant in the room, which is Colin Kaepernick. Are we actually going to see some change happen there? Are we going to get an apology to Colin Kaepernick? What does that really look like?
I don't think you're going to see an official apology, and I'm skeptical still about a team signing him, to be honest with you, because you've had several teams and owners come out over the last few weeks going, oh yeah, I would totally support signing Colin Kaepernick. It goes, okay, then why don't you do it? if you would support it.
Right.
But I will say quickly, I do think Roger Goodell saying Black Lives Matter is significant from the standpoint that if the NFL's official, if the NFL's, I'll explain, if the NFL's official league policy is now to say Black Lives Matter, that is a dramatic change from where they were a few years ago, where they were outlawing kneeling during the anthem. And as we know, a lot of NFL owners, Goodell's bosses, are Trump supporters and donors. I don't think they were very thrilled that their commissioner went out and said Black Lives Matter, because now the pressure is on them.
It's performative.
Why didn't he then use it to apologize to Kaepernick?
Period.
No, I agree. I mean, I think it's fair to definitely question anything Goodell is saying. I'm just saying, if now the corporate ideology in this country is to say Black Lives Matter, I agree. Actions speak way louder than words. But that is an improvement. And I think that represents how far we've come in a seemingly short period of time here.
Yep. All right. Well, Alex Riemer, thanks again for being here for this conversation.
Hey, guys. Always fun. Absolutely.
That was Alex Riemer from OutSports. And next up, could Facebook be causing setbacks for civil rights? Find out right here in 10 minutes. Let's talk about Facebook. Every day there seems to be something new here. 2 years ago, though, as Facebook started to face increased scrutiny for perceived racial and political bias in its decision-making processes, the company agreed to undergo an extensive civil rights audit. Now, I find this really fascinating and obviously important. And today, the results of that review are in. Here to discuss what they discovered is Jessica Gonzalez from Free Press. And Free Press are actually a media activist group and one of the organizers of the hashtag Stop Hate for Profit campaign. We actually spoke about it to halt ad spending on the social network. And they actually have said that Facebook still has not taken the boycott's calls to action seriously. Thanks, Jessica, for being here.
Thanks for having me, Shira.
So I guess, what did we discover in this audit today? Probably not too many surprising things at this point.
No, not really. We know now, like we knew before the audit came out, that Facebook has a problem with hate speech. Facebook has a problem with rampant white supremacists being allowed to use the website to organize and recruit for their horrific causes. We know that Facebook is spreading disinformation about COVID-19, that they're spreading disinformation about the elections, and that they really need to clean up their act if they are looking to ensure that we have real democracy here in the United States and globally.
Well, it's interesting because in this, they say they prioritize free expression, which to them is democracy, right, over everything else. But they weren't actually consistent and unified in this action, which I find is interesting because politicians and public figures, the report found, didn't have to abide by the same rules, it seems, as everyone else.
That's right. That's right, Shira. In fact, I pressed Mark Zuckerberg on this when we met with him on Tuesday. I really pressed him to take a deeper, more sophisticated look on his free expression analysis, because if you see what happens when people get attacked and harassed and doxxed on Facebook, it doesn't result in more speech. It actually chills the speech of people who are in groups that are often targeted or maligned.
And we were talking to Jessica Gonzalez from Free Press and their media activist group, who's doing a lot of this work to stop hate for profit and work to get Facebook to step it up right now.
So I guess for me, I just was not shocked when I saw this news, because Mark Zuckerberg has been very vocal about his involvement and not wanting to be involved in a lot of these things, whether it comes into telling the truth or being honest and silencing white supremacists. I would love to know, are we going to start seeing more governments get involved at this point? Because obviously auditors are watching him like a hawk. What does that really look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think governments all over the world, including in the United States, are considering what it means for Facebook and for Mark Zuckerberg in particular, who controls the board and the C-suite, to have this much power. And I raised with them on Tuesday how the platform has been used to advance genocide and mass atrocities against people. And, you know, the UN found that Facebook played a determining role in the genocide in Myanmar. I asked them to consider how Facebook is contributing to atrocities on U.S. soil, to the internment of children at the border, at the U.S.-Mexico border, is contributing to, you know, babies being ripped from mothers' arms, how they're contributing to, in fact, acts of violence. The shooter in El Paso almost a year ago today invoked the same language in saying that he set out to track down and hunt and kill brown people that we saw running in thousands of political ads that were showing up on Facebook. And so
did he react to that? Like, when you're talking to him, what was his reaction when you're telling him all these things?
You know, I felt that he was listening, you know, and I've been getting a lot of questions about, does he care? Does he have bad intentions? And my answer is his intentions don't matter because his impacts are super harmful. And that's how we need to focus.
Wait, was this, Jessica, was this a meeting over Zoom or Facebook video chat? Maybe they don't use Zoom. Like, how did you connect?
It was over Zoom. We could see him and hear him. And
how many people were in this meeting?
Oh, probably 15, 12.
Oh, so this is a pretty intimate group.
Yeah, this was the Stop Hate for Profit leaders. So Jarek Johnson from the NAACP, Rashad Robinson from Color of Change, Jonathan Greenblatt from ADL, and I, meeting with Sheryl Sandberg, Mark Zuckerberg, and some of the other Facebook staff.
Yeah, well, it just seems like they decided to be part of this audit. So they agreed to it. And then they got recommendations. But according to these auditors, they're not even taking those recommendations. Like, what was the takeaway even from your meeting that you had?
You know, they didn't make any firm commitments. And that's why the faces were looking really disappointed, because they're not agreeing to take action. And, you know, as I dig through the 90 pages of the audit, I think about what they did last year. They've released an audit before. They released one in July of 2019, and there were 7 main recommendations, and they only acted on 2 of them. So the audit can say what it says, and I think it did a fairly decent job of calling Facebook on its shortcomings, but it's all about the action and whether Facebook is willing to accept and act on the recommendations. And so far, we've seen far too little action.
And are y'all holding, like, Twitter or any other social media platforms accountable? Like,
Oh, yeah. Listen, Facebook is the biggest. Globally, it has 2.6 billion users. So it's really important that Facebook gets it right. The harms felt off Facebook are much more dramatic than those off Twitter. But we've had, with another coalition I work with, the Change the Terms Coalition, we've had an active campaign against Twitter for over a year now, urging it to ban white supremacists from the platform and to adopt a comprehensive suite of content moderation policies that keep people safe on that platform. We haven't seen enough from Twitter either.
Well, thank you so much, Jessica Gonzalez, for joining us and for your work. It will be interesting to see the actions that Facebook does take, if any. Again, that was Jessica Gonzalez from Free Press. Now, coming up, in a weird turn of events, Lady Antebellum, who are now Lady A, are suing a Black artist with the same name after changing theirs to cut racist ties. What's going on? We discuss that in 10 minutes. So Lady Antebellum came out and did something pretty good, considering everything that's happening. They changed their name to Lady A to remove any association with slavery. That happened in June. So you're saying to yourself, okay, Lady A, they're good. They're on the right side of history.
Yeah, they're doing something wonderful.
But it seemed like there was something happening behind the scenes that we did not know about. They were trying to reach an agreement with Seattle-based blues singer Anita White, who's actually been using the same name, Lady A, for more than a decade. Mm-hmm. And now the country group announced that they're suing her. So they said, today we are sad to share that our sincere hope to join together with Anita White, who, by the way, they took her name. She's been using this name
for over
a decade.
Their excuse was the fact that they've had a trademark on that name, but they never used it. They just had a trademark on that name just in case, I guess, for whatever reason. But my thing is, this woman has been using this name for what, like over a decade at this point.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're putting out this statement and saying, oh, we want to be here. Like, we understand where we messed up and finding out the history. We want to be on the right side of history. And then all of a sudden you're going to sue her? Like, are you kidding me? And then you're not even going to say anything. You're not like, you know, the news has hit. You're not going to put out, like, you're not going to say anything on like Twitter, like from your own personal accounts. Like, it's just wild to know that this is what's happening. And this is like a bad example of like trying to be an ally. This is trash. It's not an ally at all, in all honesty.
It kind of like became like the opposite. Yeah.
Well, it shows that they don't understand. They really don't understand this whole entire movement because they're silencing this Black woman because they probably have more money than her. They've been doing this a lot longer.
So listen to this. She said that's some white privilege on this whole lawsuit. Mm-hmm. They did, though. They did make a statement, to be clear, to CBS News. Supposedly, she and her team demanded a $10 million payment. And so they had to come to the conclusion to ask a court to affirm their right to continue to use the name Lady A, a trademark we've held for many years. The thing is, just because you hold a trademark privately because you knew possibly you'd need it because you know someone else is using it, like that, there's something about good faith, doing something right in good faith.
That's what this is.
And also, if you're going to take a stand against racism, but then do something that does prove your privilege, right, as a bunch of white people who have a band, who have, quote unquote, probably more power to do
they this. Do. They've hit more of a, they've been more successful. And I said that, you know, they've been doing it longer. They probably haven't been doing it longer, but they've actually, because if they benefited but from a
success.
System, they have reached a level of success that Lady A has unfortunately not. And so the fact that they decided to do this and they're deciding to move in this way is absolutely embarrassing. And also it just shows, like, are you kidding me? Like, you're just, now you're going to use all the power that you have. And even that statement could have been written by their lawyers to say, like, this is what you need to say. Is it really a statement from them?
Couldn't they have just changed it to, like, Lady Ants or Little Ants?
I don't care what their name is.
Just... like, there's other things out there, other options. If you're going to make an anti-racist statement, don't take a name from a Black blues singer.
No, here's the thing. If they don't want to, like, if obviously if they want to fight over Lady A, how about they just continue to be Annabella? Like, clearly, just don't change your name at all. What's the point of this? Like, if you're going to do this, what's the point of even trying to keep Lady A's name, even though it belongs to this Black woman? Like, what's the point at this point? Just be Annabella. Just do it. Just be that. And be sitting in your racism and sitting in your problematic things that you're doing and not understanding what's going on in the world. Like, it's sad. But,
well, we'll see what happens with this one and if they decide to move forward after a ton of backlash that they are receiving.
Right.
Well, coming up, Dr. Anthony Fauci has pinpointed the reason why the U.S.'s COVID-19 response has gone so wrong. The clip next on What's Trending This Hour. Welcome back, and we've got a lot coming up this hour from our Tea Report, top stories in pop culture and entertainment news, to, of course, our Yaz Queen of the Day. Mm. And before we get into what's trending this hour, you know what it is, what July is. July is Ryan's birthday.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And you know what? I'm still trying to figure out, how do you celebrate a birthday in the midst of a pandemic in quarantine? I have no clue. And honestly, I'm trying to like think about doing something like we did last year where we got an Airbnb house and we were in Palm Springs. Shout out to y'all listening. And yeah, it's just, I'm out here searching for it. And these prices, people are trying to get their mortgage paid, honey. I'm telling you. I don't know what's going on. These houses have went from like, you know, just getting like maybe $1,200. Now shot out to like $3,000 for just three nights in a house in Palm Springs. It's
what
wild.
Do they think? They think it's Coachella or something?
That's what I'm saying. No, seriously. And I get it. People are trying to, you know, like I said, compensate for the money that they've lost in a time like
probably.
This.
Probably. Yeah.
But honey, like seriously, it's too much. And I love spending my birthday. Like I love just the energy in Palm Springs. Like I really love y'all. And so like when we're there, it's just wonderful to relax. But I don't know what I'm going to do. I need help, y'all. If you're listening, give us some ideas. Hit us up at LGT Show because my birthday, I'm turning 27. Yes.
Oh,
turning
27. Are you sure about that?
Yes, I'm turning 27. And I just want to be able to relax. I just want to do something.
Well, you know, we do have a beach here, Ryan. You could do what I did, where I just had a social distance beach hang for sunset.
But didn't one of those girls that were there, didn't they catch COVID?
Who knows? She supposedly is a liar. So I guess we'll never know. She's a compulsive liar.
That's supposed to be Shira's friend, by the way.
Well, it doesn't mean she doesn't have issues. Anyway.
All right, let's move on.
All right, let's get into some what's trending this hour. In an interview with Nate Silver's 538, Dr. Anthony Fauci said, if there wasn't so much divisiveness in the U.S., there would have been a more coordinated approach to suppressing COVID-19.
You know, I think you'd have to admit that that's the case. You have to be having blindfolds on and covering your ears to think that we don't live in a very divisive society now from a political standpoint. I mean, it's just unfortunate, but it is what it is. And you know from experience historically that when you don't have unanimity in an approach to something, you're not as effective in how you handle it. So I think you'd have to make the assumption that if there wasn't such divisiveness, that we would have a more coordinated approach.
Well, I mean, that seems just obvious. This is making headlines, this video, but it's a pretty obvious thing to take note of.
So I actually really understand what he's saying here. And I think the reason why it's making headlines is because, yes, everything is very divisive right now. And politics is really getting in the way. And it's really frustrating because I know he's trying to do his best with keeping Trump happy, but also being real about the situation and trying to put politics aside and just get us out of this COVID-19 era that we are in, right? And it's very frustrating when everyone is politicizing, wearing masks, not wearing masks, you're seeing the Karens go crazy. It's probably really frustrating being Dr. Anthony Fauci, to be quite honest. I don't see how he continues to do it, but he's trying to help at some point, you know?
He is. Let me tell you, his patience during all of this is award-winning, like for real.
For sure.
Like watching him, how he describes things, and he's very practical. It's fascinating to witness. Okay, now let's move on to the Supreme Court, who ruled today that a large chunk of eastern Oklahoma remains an American Indian reservation. And that's a decision that state and federal officials have warned could throw Oklahoma into chaos. So this ruling, it means that Oklahoma prosecutors won't have the authority to pursue criminal cases against American Indian defendants in Oklahoma or parts of Oklahoma that include most of Tulsa, the second largest city. Now let's move on to what's happening out of Florida State University. There's confusion over this memo that was sent to employees about caring for children while working remotely. And it's really put a spotlight on the pain parents are enduring during this time. A lot of professors at FSU took to Twitter last week after receiving a memo from the university that said it would return to normal policy on August 7th and no longer allow employees to care for children while working remotely. How would that work? Well, Catherine Schaefer, who's a doctoral candidate in clinical psychology at FSU, who's caring for a two-year-old, said, "I laughed out loud and then I called my older sister and her husband, who are lawyers in Washington, D.C., and asked them, is this legal? It just seemed like an outrageous demand." Meanwhile, the university sent out a second email 2 days later to faculty and staff, apologizing that the first message caused confusion and anxiety for many employees and clarifying that its policy does still allow employees to work from home while caring for children. Good to know. They can't throw away their kids while they're working. But coming up, we're getting into the tea report. So what's coming up, Ryan?
All right. So we're giving you the latest on Glee star Naya Rivera. And sources are also saying that Kanye West's family feels like he is in the midst of a bipolar episode. Y'all, I don't know about you, but can 2020 be over already? We've got all that up next in the tea report. It's time for another Tea Report, giving you all those pop culture stories that you probably missed out on. But guess what, honey? We got you covered. And we're actually going to be kind of starting on a somber note today because there is an awful story that broke last night, basically, but is obviously developing. So Glee star Naya Rivera, she's basically presumed dead after she went missing from a boat at a California lake during an outing with her four-year-old son. So she was only 33. She rented a pontoon boat around 1 p.m. on Wednesday with her four-year-old son, Josie, at Lake Piru. And that's according to a representative from the Ventura County Sheriff's Department. About 3 hours later, another boater actually found four-year-old Josie alone and sleeping on the boat. The boy, however, was wearing a life vest, but Naya wasn't. An adult vest was found on the boat, though. And so here is a statement that is coming out of the Ventura County Sheriff's Office. Officials are now calling this a search recovery effort. They said that hasn't changed anything in the efforts that we're putting forth to locate her. It kind of all changes the title in a sense. We're presuming that an accident happened, and we're presuming that she drowned in the lake.
That's so unfortunate. This is a really sad story when it came out, and yeah. I can't imagine what even happened. And then the 4-year-old son just found sleeping on the boat alone.
You know, and I feel like it's too soon, because as soon as I saw this story, I also saw the conversations online talking about the Glee curse and how cast has just really been going through it. And there's only very few people from the original, from this cast that is still kind of one alive and still doing very good things. And it's just sad that.
Actually, yeah, there's two others. One took their life.
Yes.
And another OD'd.
Yes.
And then this.
Yeah. So it is very, very sad. And we're going to keep you updated here on the T Report as soon as we continue to get updates and stuff. But that's such a sad story. And 33, such a young, beautiful soul. But let's move on to some good news, though, because in television news, we found a new Batwoman. Remember when I told you Ruby Rose, she's no longer doing the show? Yep. Well, honey, Batwoman found its new lead, and it is a bisexual Black woman named Javicia Leslie, and she is now cast, and she's stepping into the cape for this upcoming season. There's a statement. She said, "I'm extremely proud to be the first Black actress to play the iconic role of Batwoman on television, and as a bisexual woman, I am honored to join this groundbreaking show, which has been such a trailblazer for the LGBTQ+ community." Now, her character, she's playing a whole new character named Ryan Wilder. Oh my God, I love it when girls are named Ryan. Basically, she's described as this likable, messy, a little goofy, and untamed. Wow, is that me? She's also apparently nothing like Ruby Rose's character. And yeah, it's going to be very interesting. And I feel like it's obviously going to bring in a whole entire new crowd. And I am so excited because I will be tuning into this next season.
Yeah, this seems like a great choice, and I love it. Yeah, really good decision moving forward after that whole craziness with Ruby Rose.
No, right? And we still don't know really why Ruby Rose left, but I think it is, you know, when we're talking about now and what we're seeing even with Naya, you know, there's so many conversations, and I'm so happy people are talking about mental health, but it is so serious, and you just don't know what is going on with people. And I'm hoping Ruby is taking the time that she needs, because this is an absolutely amazing new journey for Javicia, at least. And I think that's the silver lining out of all of this. So yeah, let's move on to Kanye West, right? We talked about Kanye West yesterday and how he decided to run for president, and he's, you know, talking policy in some way, and he's literally letting us know what he's into. And we found out he's an anti-vaxxer. He is not into abortion. He's very pro-life. But here's the thing. Sources are coming out of the family saying that the family is very concerned. You know, speaking of mental health, people are saying, you know, he suffers with bipolar disorder, right? And they're saying that he's actually in a very serious midst of a bipolar episode. And a lot of people around him are very concerned that it has impacted his decision making and some of these things that he said in the last week. So people are like, I guess TMZ has these sources saying that his family and those close to him are very worried. They believe things will stabilize as they have in the past. The problem here, though, we're told, is Kanye's, recent announcements are causing a lot of issues. So I don't really know what to
say the least.
What do you think about that? Do you think he's having this kind of manic episode, unfortunately?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. We've seen it happen before. We saw it when he had that whole TMZ moment, right? Where he was like,
and he
also
admitted to that.
Yeah. And so it's hard when you're in the eye of the storm to be aware of that until he's on the other side of that. So who knows? Because he is an artist. This is kind of how he pushes himself to create, but it can get complicated. Well, and so I just hope he's taking care of himself, and I hope that they're figuring this out, or he is, because it could be dangerous.
My thing is with this story, when they're talking about the sources, I just wonder what Kim is thinking, because when he announced, she actually low-key kind of endorsed him by retweeting it and putting, like, captioning it with, like, an American flag, like she was in support of his decision. So it seems like I don't know who on what side of the family they're talking about are concerned, because it does seem like Kim Kardashian is, like, ready to be the first lady.
Yeah, I could see her being ready to be the first lady. Or, right. You know, it would be really bold.
Honey, from, like, sex tape to first lady. Love to see
right?
it.
For real, in modern America. So what would be really bold is if he named her his VP.
Oh God, please don't wish that on us. If you want to know more about this story and all the other stories that we have covered here at the Tea Report, head over to WeAreChannelQ.com and keep us followed at LGT Show everywhere.
Okay, now coming up, how this college student went viral on TikTok and caught the attention of Disney and Marvel. That's next on our Yas Queen of the Day. It is time to get inspired and some positivity with our Yas Queen of the Day.
Yas Queen.
So I'm not sure if you saw this TikTok video, Ryan. It has over 22 million views. It's of Julian Bass, this guy who goes from a Jedi to a real life version of popular cartoon Ben 10 yes. to Spider-Man in seconds.
I most definitely saw this video. This is not his first video, by the way, that has gone viral. No. This guy is absolutely incredible with what he does. And I'm so happy that he's getting this major recognition.
Yeah, I mean, he's a young guy. He's right now in college. And so this video that went viral, it got so much attention. He even heard from Disney exec chairman Bob Iger himself, who replied on this video saying, "The world's gonna know your name." And he's been talking to a lot of other Hollywood folks. Even Josh Gad replied to this. He's been getting just a lot of attention. But he appeared on Good Morning America to talk about this newfound fame.
I would say, so I've spoken to people like Matthew Cherry. We've been in contact, and but I would say, like, you know, the big wig, Luis Despacito, right, with Marvel, wow. has been the biggest thing for me. I've just been like, oh my goodness, this is Marvel Studios right here on the phone. And I missed the first call, which was probably the worst thing to do. But I was able to, you know, I was able to call back and, you know, just make time for that. It's amazing.
Here's the thing, Cher. I feel like, honestly, though, because this is on TikTok, right? This is the video that he uploaded this on TikTok.
Yes.
He is most definitely cheating TikTok, because I see, like, Jason Derulo's videos, his videos, they're going through a whole editing process to show on TikTok, because I could never do this. Is everyone doing this inside of TikTok? Is that what
no,
the features
people-
are?
People can edit their videos outside and then upload.
That is so intense. I love it. I mean, I honestly love it, but it does feel like I will never get up to that type of standard of, like,
I believe in you.
Editing.
I believe in you, Ryan. Anyway, go check out this guy.
I mean, it's not like I'm trying. It's not like I'm trying. Right. I know my place.
Julian Bass is this guy's name. Go check out the TikTok, because, yeah, who knows? He might be in a Marvel project very soon, and I love how social media can make that happen, including for people that are actually very talented. It's nice to see.
For sure. They deserve. It's Black excellence.
Exactly. Now let's move on to Ellie Goldstein, an 18-year-old model with Down syndrome who's become one of the newest faces to represent Gucci Beauty. Gucci Beauty released an unconventional beauty series to support emerging talents and promote the theme of unconventional and non-stereotypical beauty. And Ellie was part of this. So very cool. Although my hope is in the future, this all won't be part of unconventional beauty. It is just beauty.
Yeah, that is true. That is a very weird title for a campaign at this point. I mean, we're in 2020. Maybe I could have seen something like that in, like, 1992. But, like, 2020, it feels it's more inclusive. It's trying to be, people are bringing up a lot of things that are uncomfortable. And I think saying that she's unconventionally pretty is just, like, a weird backstabbing compliment. I don't know. But I guess they have good intentions, and I'm happy she's getting some shine.
Exactly.
But girl.
So check out Ellie Goldstein, because definitely she's making her dreams come true. So we love that. Okay, this one, I gotta say, move over Tucker Carlson, who thinks masks haven't been proven by science. He says it's science theater. Here is mechanical engineer and science guy, Bill Nye, who's proving why wearing masks is so important.
Here's an N95. These are made to block particles in the medical environment and when you're out mowing the lawn. This one's not sterilized, but it's pretty effective. So the reason we want you to wear a mask is to protect you, sure. But the main reason we want you to wear a mask is to protect me from you and the particles from your respiratory system from getting into my respiratory system. Everybody, this is a matter literally of life and death. And when I use the word literally, I mean literally a matter of life and death. So when you're out in public, please wear a mask. Thank you for joining me on Consider the Following.
All right. Love me some Bill Nye.
I mean, actually, I really do love Bill Nye, too. He is, I think I talked about him, like how I find him very attractive, like in a very nerdy way.
Of course.
He's cute. He's very cute. I love me a nerd. So if y'all are nerds out there, I am looking, honey.
Hit him up. All right. That was our Yas Queen of the day.
Yes, Queen.
Okay, now coming up, Erykah Badu teamed up with DJ Mark Rebier to bring you the jam session of quarantine, if not the century. I was just dying watching this. That's next in our Made My Day moment. As we wrap up the show, we have some great Made My Day moments today. Okay, let's start it off with this video of DJ Mark Rebier, who's gone viral, including in quarantine. He does these crazy DJ sets, and he also did this whole drive-in movie theater DJ tour. Well, he teamed up with Erykah Badu for this epic set that is just really out there.
All right, let's make something.
What a blow it. Low. Bitch, that bought the bar. What a blow it. Low. Bitch, that bought the bar. What a blow it. Low.
So just imagine this guy, he's wearing basically a bathrobe, nothing underneath, his underwear. And then Erykah Badu has this like star thing over her head.
Yeah, it's like, really... it was more like a cage, but I love that. And I honestly, when I saw that clip, it totally made my day because that guy has come a long way. He is most definitely a creator and he's just brilliant at what he does. And he actually has some talent too. He's really good at it. But something that also made my day, Shira. Yeah, is what? Remember the Costco guy that was screaming, I feel threatened.
You're coming close to me.
Back off!
Oh, yeah.
Well, there is this hilarious comedian. Her name is Blair Erskine. And she is, like I said, a writer and a comedian. And she actually did this video where she pretended to be that guy, Dan Maple's wife. And here's a funny clip and skit that she did.
I know that a lot of y'all have seen that video of my husband Dan asserting his American rights in Costco. So I just want to clear a few things up about it, okay? Dan was not threatened in the Costco. I know that he was like, I feel threatened, but he was not threatened at all. He wasn't scared at all, were you, babe? No. No, see, I feel threatened is it's actually our family's crest, so we just say it sometimes. Like, he said it to me in our wedding vows, you know? He was like, I feel threatened. And I was like, I do too. Second of all, we don't wear masks in this family. I have asthma. Dan has asthma. Our children, Jackson, Oakland, Cemetery, hydrochloroquine, they all have asthma when it's convenient for them to have it, so...
That's talents, let me tell you.
it really made me chuckle, especially when she's talking about her kids and being like, everyone has asthma when it makes sense for them.
Yeah, I mean, I love this. This is comedy at its finest. This is what we need right now. Comedy gold. All right. Well, that does it for the show today. We're leaving you with some laughs, but we'll be back tomorrow. We're going to be getting into what happens if the U.S. runs out of gloves and masks as COVID cases spike again, because supposedly it's happening, and how to have that COVID-19 talk with your friends before hanging out, because it can be awkward. Just saying. You got to set the rules.
I mean, of course you would know. You're a prime example of probably someone who has had this talk so many times. I can't wait to hear your perspective on this. Social distance.
No, I do. That is not fair. Don't hang out with anyone. Ryan just loves to drag me whatever way he can.
No. I don't think it's about dragging. I want us to not think about it like that. I want us to think about, you know, us just saying the truth and saying, Shira hasn't social distanced. She's told you all plenty of stories about how she's traveled.
I have the same two people that I hang out with that are in my bubble. Okay. So don't create rumors.
It's okay. It's not a rumor. You told these same things that I'm saying, Shira. It's
I promote actual safety and not being part of the problem.
I don't know. We'll have more of this conversation tomorrow.
Tomorrow on the show, yes, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Channel Q. You can listen to our show as a podcast daily or whatever you want. Binge listen on the radio.com app.
Might as well.
Let's go there. There you go. We are sending you love and light.
And honey, remember to slay.
See you tomorrow. Have a great night.
Bye, y'all.